Hello and welcome to the Money and Banking Law Podcast with Joe Sylvia, brought to you by the global law firm of Duane Morris. I'm your host, Joe Sylvia. I'm a former Federal Reserve lawyer who represents banks, fintechs, and other clients on M&A, payments, and regulatory matters at Duane Morris. I'm also a core member of our banking, fintech, and digital assets and blockchain practices. The goal of the Money and Banking Law Podcast is to inform and educate our clients and friends on both the fundamental concepts and structure of the banking ecosystem, as well as critical developments in the law and regulation of money and banking. On this episode, we're talking about what banks, credit unions, and fintech vendors need to know about the Department of Justice. Our guest today is Brian Pandia, a partner in the Washington, D.C. office of Duane Morris. Brian joined Duane Morris in 2021 after serving at the DOJ as Deputy Associate Attorney General for 2 years. Welcome, Brian. Thank you. So grateful for your time. I'd like to start by asking you to give a brief introduction for our audience to learn a little bit about your background and your practice at Duane Morris.
Well, thank you, Joe. And it's a pleasure to be joining you on the podcast. And today in Washington, D.C. feels like a cold and windy Chicago day. So even though we're sitting on different sides of the country, it's a pleasure joining you virtually. Yeah, so my practice sits at the intersection of government and regulation and technology. A lot of the clients I work with are in the financial sector, or they deal with the financial sector, such as fintech vendors or digital asset companies. So that's been a big part of my practice, and I attribute a lot of that to my time at the Department of Justice, which we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, that's great. It's great to hear about this, your intersection of government and tech. And how did you get into this area?
Well, that's a great question, Joe. And I don't want to, we could certainly spend the whole podcast talking about how I kind of got into this area, but I'll give you the elevator speech version of it. So, my background is in engineering. So I've always had an interest in technology and innovation. After I went to law school, I clerked on a court that had a lot of technology cases, the Eastern District of Texas. And for about the first 10 years of my career, I worked almost exclusively in patent litigation. Now, some of my favorite cases in patent litigation were cases where I was representing financial institutions where they had typically been sued by a patent troll or a non-practicing entity, often on check processing patents. For the listeners in our audience today that remember Check 21, that was a big time of technology adoption for the financial sector that also spurred a lot of IP litigation within the financial services sector. So that was kind of my pivot point or my launching point to getting involved in the financial services sector. While I still do a lot of patent litigation, a lot of my practice kind of trended towards into adjacent areas, whether it be antitrust or competition disputes, data privacy and cybersecurity counseling, and related actions. So I did that in Washington, D.C. for about 13 and a half years. And then in 2018, I had an opportunity to join the United States Department of Justice. I was appointed Deputy Associate Attorney General. The Associate Attorney General's office oversees all of the litigating components of the Justice Department and the grant-making components. And from there, that is where that has kind of given me a lot of the foundation for what I do today in practice.
That's awesome. So when you worked at the DOJ from 2018 to 2020, 2021, what did your portfolio cover?
Great. Well, you're already speaking like a Washington insider, Joe, even though you're in Chicago, saying what does your portfolio cover? But my portfolio, I thought, was the, at least for me, the most fun portfolio to have at the Justice Department. So I oversaw cases and investigations in the antitrust division. I also oversaw part of the civil division, a mix of consumer protection cases, which we'll talk about in a bit, because the consumer protection jurisdiction is very important to the financial sector, and also worked on some national security cases, which of course is important to the banking sector, and then worked on a number of special projects related to data privacy and cybersecurity. So those are my three big areas: a civil division, antitrust division, and then special projects around privacy and cybersecurity.
Awesome. Okay, so let's get into what you're seeing with respect to the DOJ specifically. Recent changes in the structure, how financial institutions and their vendors, whether they're fintech vendors or regular vendors, what do they care about? Why should they care about the structural changes? What's going on at the DOJ these days?
Sure. Let me highlight two changes that may have flown under the radar of a lot of people unless you're a DOJ insider. But that is the dissolution of the tax division and the dissolution of the consumer protection branch of the civil division and the creation of the new enforcement and affirmative litigation branch. I think the reason those two or three developments are especially important to the banking industry, to credit unions, to fintech vendors, to anyone that touches the financial services sector, is that because a lot of the cases and investigations that concern the banking industry spun out of those two components. Now, I'm going to focus more on the consumer protection piece because that's partly my practice area, partly what I oversaw at DOJ, but it's also, I think, most relevant to what is happening today in the banking industry, the financial services industry, because the consumer protection branch is in many ways the outside counsel to the Federal Trade Commission. So once FTC investigates something, whether it be a data privacy breach, whether it be an unfair and deceptive trade practice, and to be clear, consumer protection also had its own standalone enforcement authority. That would often be the branch that would be litigating the case. So what DOJ has done in creating the affirmative litigation section, or the enforcement and affirmative litigation section, is has created a new component that I think will be very focused on pursuing misconduct by different entities, whether that be or what they perceive to be misconduct, whether that be mishandling of private information, false claims against the government, or countless other investigations that DOJ may seek to bring. Now, I think it's also interesting that this is being styled as affirmative and enforcement litigation, which suggests that they are going to be going out and seeking cases that interests the department, that interests the administration. So it's not necessarily going to just be a reactive branch or component of DOJ, but something that actually pursues priorities of the department, and that acts on referrals, that acts on what they see happening in the field. So yeah, I do think that having this new structure at DOJ is going to be impactful. It's going to free up resources to pursue some cases that maybe in the past were not pursued due to a lack of resources or priorities being spread across multiple components, and then there was simply a coordination problem. So I think it's a big development, and it's something that we should be watching closely to see what types of cases they're pursuing and what steps we, the financial sector, can be taking to make sure that we're not in the enforcement crosshairs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I wanted to kind of follow up and poke a little bit on this affirmative litigation unit that you talked about. So, I never worked at the DOJ. I wasn't smart enough to get into the DOJ, and I'm also not a litigator, so that doesn't help. But when you mentioned this affirmative litigation unit in terms of pursuing policy aims of the department, is that consistent with what we've seen in the past, whether it's with regard to financial institutions or otherwise? Is that consistently been what the DOJ has been focused on in terms of going out and trying to address policy related initiatives?
Well, I think there's two ways to look at that question. So one way is, and I don't think this piece is going to change, but maybe it'll be amplified or more focused. As we know, in the banking sector and the financial sector, you need money to do almost anything. So if you were prosecuting a narco crime, if you were prosecuting a terrorist group, if you're prosecuting or simply pursuing any type of nefarious activity that the government, that the United States wants to put a stop to, bringing criminal prosecutions, but also civil litigation, civil enforcement actions in and through the financial sector can have a very profound impact on reducing activity that the government wants to stop. I mean, we all in the banking sector are familiar with suspicious activity reports, with SARS reports. You know, we're also familiar with Bank Secrecy Act rules, with other national security related reporting. And oftentimes DOJ and alone or in concert with the Department of Treasury will use that data to pursue certain actions. So I think that's one way where things have played out in the past and will continue to play out in the past. But I think in the other, to your other point, DOJ has always pursued affirmative litigation. Sometimes the challenge was that simply due to the size of the department or the fact that subject matter expertise lies in different areas, you would need to form a task force. You need to form a working group to bring people together. And I think the intent of the enforcement and affirmative litigation branch is to bring the offensive lawyers together under one branch, under one component, so they can then go out and pursue litigation in an efficient manner that addresses whatever the policy goals may be of the department.
Okay, understood. Gotcha. So anything else that you want to mention with respect to this change in structure, or you know, what's been going on specifically in your practice, if there's been any hot areas or anything else that's that you're seeing trends at?
Sure. Well, and you know, one area, I mean, aside from the affirmative litigation, you know, aside from the national security investigations, which remain very hot areas, remain highly relevant to the banking industry. I think the other area where we are seeing an uptick in activity comes in the antitrust and competition space, with greater scrutiny of transactions, including transactions involving banks and credit unions, but also what the antitrust enforcers call conduct investigations, where they perceive that two companies, whether they be in the financial sector, the fintech sector, or elsewhere, are engaging in conduct that restricts consumer choices, restricts innovation. So we're seeing a lot of activity, a lot of chatter in that area. So those are two emerging, or two or three emerging areas that we're seeing right now in Washington, D.C., at least coming out of the Department of Justice.
Oh, okay, great. Well, that's very helpful. I appreciate it.
I think it's, I think it's an exciting time to be in Washington, D.C., exciting time to practice here. And if we have any young lawyers listening to the podcast, I mean, I know DOJ is actively hiring, and I know that although I went into DOJ a little bit later in my career than a lot of lawyers do, I know it has been very foundational for me, and I think everyone that works there enjoys it. So, I mean, this is a great opportunity to go do interesting and important work. And if we have any young lawyers listening to today's podcast, I certainly recommend looking at that as an opportunity. And I know, Joe, you value your time working at the Federal Reserve. So, I mean, government service is important, and there's some great opportunities out there right now.
That's absolutely right. And for anyone that I've ever met that has worked at the DOJ specifically, including yourself, they've all had really good experiences. And, you know, obviously it's more than just a really nice credential on the resume, but it's really, like you said, it's important work. I've just got to believe that it's just really fascinating to be on the inside and being in some of those discussions and finding out where the hot topics are, where the real issues kind of get hammered out. And so that's really awesome, Brian. I really appreciate it. Final question for you before we let you go. Where can our audience find you if they have any questions or if they need your specific expertise?
Sure. Well, the best way to reach me is either, of course, at my Duane Morris email, bhpandya, P-A-N-D-Y-A, at duanemorris.com. I also have an active LinkedIn presence if you prefer to reach me there. I am on X and Threads, but While I'm an avid reader of both platforms, I don't post or retweet a whole lot on the on either of those social media platforms. But certainly email is always good, and LinkedIn are probably the two best ways to reach me. And you know, happy to chat with any listeners of today's podcast.
Great. Well, thank you, Brian. I really appreciate your time and sharing your expertise with us today. For our listeners out there, that's all for today. And if you have any questions from any of our other episodes, please reach out to me at jsylvia@duanemorris.com or to Brian or any of your other favorite Duane Morris lawyers. Finally, be sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening in. Please stay tuned for new episodes coming soon. We've got more in the hopper coming forth. So I appreciate it again, Brian. It was great to have you. And thanks, everybody, for listening in.
Thank you, Joe.